Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
And welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott, and I'm here with Mark Pascal. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and you can also reach us through restaurantguysradio.com if you want to have our show delivered to your computer every time you sign up. If you subscribe at iTunes, you can subscribe to our podcast and have our show delivered to your computer every time you sign on. Isn't that swell? Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing dynamite. Feeling pretty good. Nice high energy morning.
I'd like to say you look good. Sorry, I don't know where that came from.
If you weren't the evil, vile man that you are, you might.
But I cannot tell a lie. All right, everyone out there in radio listener land, there is a product available. Mark and I have traveled. Have we ever been in Spain together?
Never in Spain, no.
No. We've traveled a lot of the world together, but we've also gone our separate ways. And one of my favorite countries in the world is Spain. And the food of Spain is really amazing. And there's some good Spanish food in America, but there are some foods that are available only in Spain.
Actually, quite a few.
That you can't get here. And one of the things that's very interesting about importing meat, and I'm going somewhere with this story, everybody. I'm going to tell you about a new...
We're just wondering where and when.
And Mark was nodding off at the microphone across the... Across
was
the
that way. My eyes rolling
Mark,
back in
Mark,
my head?
Mark, wake up. Yes. I'm sorry. So there's a new product that has heretofore been unavailable in the United States that will soon become available. And this is a product that when I go to Spain, and I've been there often, and I love Spanish culture. You know, it's easier for me because I speak Spanish, so I can sort of get around a little easier in there.
You just go for the bullfights. Who are you kidding?
And I love the bullfights, and I love cigars, and I love Spanish women. Anyway.
Hey, now.
And I love...
Just fishing for emails today, aren't
and
you?
And I love the product. Sí, señoras,
por
favor.
Available man looking for Spanish woman. I can see it now.
Por favor, soy solo. So here's the deal. Jamón Ibérico is a Spanish ham.
Now, this is actually something you've been talking about for years and years and years.
And Mark's never been to Spain with me. You know, we're foodies, so I'm always talking about how he has to come to Spain with me, if only to have jamón Ibérico. And
seems
ham,
like a kind of a long trip for ham.
But it's completely worth it, but you won't have to make it soon. Now, when you go to Spain, it's a very ham-centric culture. Mm-hmm. It's a very pork-centric culture.
Well, a lot of Europe, especially that area of Europe, they do a lot of meat curing and ham curing, and it seems like almost every single country has their version or variety of it. And in some countries, obviously, like Spain, every little region has their own version. It's the same thing with Italy.
Well, and you have, I think most people are familiar with prosciutto and prosciutto di Parma.
Sure.
And prosciutto San Daniele, which are the Italian hams, the Italian mm-hmm. dry-cured hams. But in Spain, the one that you can find around here is called jamón serrano. But what people may not realize is that in order to import meat, a ham, into the United States, a dry-cured ham to the United States, or any sort of meat, it has to be slaughtered at a USDA-certified facility.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is there are no USDA-certified facilities in Spain.
Because you're in Spain.
No, but they certify facilities in other countries. That's mm-hmm. how you're able to import meat from other countries. But Spain has only recently gotten a USDA-certified... the way you got in jamón serrano in the past is they would raise the pigs in Spain and then send them to other countries mm-hmm. that had USDA certification. But we have the first butcher in slaughtering plant in Spain that's certified by the USDA, and we're going to have this unbelievable ham called jamón ibérico
mm-hmm.
and pork products from Pata Negra, which are the pigs that make jamón ibérico. Let me tell you how these things work.
Yeah, you have to tell everybody how the ham, why the hams taste so good.
When you see these hams on a plate, I mean, you'll go out to a place and you'll order their jamón mm-hmm. serrano for €5 or €6, and the jamón ibérico is like €14, very expensive. But it comes out, it's a different color, it's shiny, it glistens. The fat of jamón ibérico melts at about 70 degrees.
Wow.
So literally, it comes out and it just glistens at 70 degrees.
And it's, it's actually starting to melt on the plate.
And check this out. Because of the way that they cure jamón ibérico, the fat of the ham is a monounsaturated fat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like olive oil. It's one of the. It's ham that has. It's good for you. Unbelievable. Okay.
Homer Simpson would be so proud.
The unique flavor of jamón ibérico comes from the pigs themselves and the way they're raised. I'm reading from, I think, the Times here. Am I reading from the Times? Yeah, I'm reading from the Sunday Times. The pigs themselves are called pata negra, or the Iberian black-footed pigs. They live only in Spain, where they foraged for acorns in the cork oak forests of western Spain for millennia. The meat is high in heart-healthy monounsaturated fats, and thin slices of the jamón glisten on the plate as the golden fat melts when room temperatures rise above 70 degrees.
But the primary food for these pigs is the acorns, and that's what gives them such a distinctive flavor. And it's different than any other pork you've ever had anywhere else. And
so we have to look for jamón ibérico when it comes out. It is absolutely different. And you need, you know, people have a little ham at home, and you need to slice it very thin. So you often get it, when you hear about, people call about tapas,
right,
where you go out for the little appetizers in Spain. You know, we have sort of a fake way of doing that about here. But when you go out for a tapas in Spain, you often will get a place of ham, and it's beautiful. Now
realize that some of these hams will be available relatively soon. But because some of these hams are cured for 23 months, we're not going to see these products for 2 years.
What you'll see soon is the Iberico pork loin, or lomo. You'll see chorizo, which is a sausage.
Mm-hmm.
You will see another year it will take before you get the paletas, which are shoulders. That's not the same as the full Iberico hams. And it'll be 2 years before you see the jamones, or the full.
Right, and again,
hams.
That's because they're aged for 23 months. So those pigs are being butchered and beginning to start the aging process now, or a month from now, and they'll be here about 2 years from now.
Now, the way these things work is they dry the... You're talking about a culture where their first... It's not quite fast food, but one of their major chains... I don't know if you know this, Mark, but one of the major places you can go to in Spain, it's called the...
Burger King?
No, it's called... one of their
McDonald's.
Big fast food places...
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
It's called...
Taco Bell.
Are you done?
Almost.
It's called...
Wendy's.
It's called El Museo de Jamón. The fast place to get a bite is the Museum of Ham. You walk into this place and there are
hams. Sounds like my kind of museum.
Oh, absolutely. And there are hams hanging from the ceiling, hoof on. So when they want another ham, throw on the slice, they like reach up into the ceiling and pull one down.
Now that's fast food.
Absolutely amazing. That's fast food the right way. So this is going to be brought in. What is the name of the company this bring is in? It's a Harris family. Is the owner of a company called La Tienda. Means the store. It's not a very creative name, but it's called La Tienda, and they're taking orders now for the lomo, which would be coming in shortly, and they're also taking orders for the hams, which won't be here for 2 years.
I think it's beautiful. You have to put a $199 deposit down on your ham for 2 years from now if you want to get in line.
Do you know what a ham costs? You know what a ham's going to cost?
I do.
$1,000 for one leg,
that
one ham leg.
The greatest ham of all time.
Let's put it this way. I'm going online tomorrow. I'm giving him my $299, and I'm inviting you over.
Oh, yeah.
So this is
I literally can't wait for this.
This is a little tip. It's jamón ibérico, and it's called La Tienda. And you can go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com. These guys are not advertisers, although I probably should have thought of that before I started recommending it. Maybe they could have been advertisers. But this is really a great step forward. And people, this family has been working for 8 years, 8 years to overcome the administrative hurdles to get a USDA-certified meat packing plant in Spain.
And really exciting. I mean, you guys, it's going to be spectacular when this hits the United
States. Food of the world. Listen, our guest coming up is Anthony Giglio. Anthony Giglio is the wine columnist for Boston Magazine. He also reviews for several New Jersey publications, and we'll talk with him more about that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis from Stage Left Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, soon to be Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, and we're here with our friend Anthony Giglio, who is our favorite food critic writing in the state of New Jersey. How you doing, Anthony?
Anthony,
hey guys,
welcome
what's up?
To the show.
Thank you, guys. Welcome back.
Anthony writes for New Jersey Life magazine. He's also the wine columnist for Boston magazine. He also has a new book on cocktails that's out, and you can find out about all those things if you go to our website, which is restaurantguysradio.com, and we'll send you over to all those neat things that Anthony does. You write pretty humorously there, Anthony.
You think?
You really get the joke. You don't take yourself too seriously, and I think you're a very serious food writer and a very serious culinarian, but you really sort of... You know, you write in a lighthearted way.
I think you can. I think that what Francis is saying is you tell the story with pictorially almost.
Yeah. What do you do when you're reviewing a restaurant? I mean, what is it that you're trying to communicate? Is it mostly a rating or is it mostly a story? What is your goal?
Well, I think I try to break the formula of writing that, you know, I think you exists in a lot of magazines and newspapers where, you know, you sit, you know, there's an opening paragraph on maybe a little bit about the scene, and then it gets right into the formula of soup, salad, entree, pasta, dessert, whatever.
I had this and it was great. I had that and it was overdressed. I had this and it was gummy. 4 stars.
Right, to die for. To die for. To die for. So I really think that
you don't die in your reviews very much.
No. I think they want to die when they read them.
Sometimes.
I guess what I like to try to do is tell stories like my dad does, which is, you know, you pull people in with a lot of detail, and it's like campfire. Like everyone just sits around with their mouths open, like, "Oh my God, is he really saying this?"
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to be provocative at all. I'm just saying, like, this is one person's opinion. Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
I just happen to be being paid for it, but I want you to see it through my eyes. Just, you know, this one meal I've had there, or these two meals I've had there.
Anthony, don't take this the wrong way, but I sometimes sit as I'm reading your reviews with my mouth open going, "Oh my God, is he really saying that?"
You know, Mark and I are funny as restaurateurs because we read these reviews and we realize that what people want to see is a train wreck. Okay, I mean, people get, I think what probably sells more magazines is if you have, I mean, there are all these junk publications out there who are like, every restaurant they rate, they get
3.5 stars, right?
3.5 and 4 stars. And what that means is the place has no credibility. I mean, the publication has no credibility. But what I think people are most interested in are in when a publication rarely gives out its top rating. When it gives out its top rating, that's a story. But that's not as good a story as the devastating blow of a remark from a restaurant critic. And being on, well, we've never really received any ourselves, thank God. We've worked in restaurants that have. And it's just interesting to see. I mean, don't you find that's the case? Do you think it's easier to review a restaurant that is abominable than it is to review one that's, you know, kind of good?
I have to say, like, when I was at New Jersey Monthly those 10 years, I didn't get many 4 stars because we were very serious about how they gave out stars. And there were only two, the Ryland Inn and Nicholas. Valerie did Nicholas, Valerie Sinclair, and I had the Ryland. And I remember the first time I did the Ryland, and I knew it was like, unlike anything I had ever experienced, even in New York.
Mm-hmm.
It took me forever to write it because I didn't want to say, you know, I was trying to be, you know, really creative and without being like gushing.
Right.
You know what I mean? It took a lot of effort to talk in my own voice. But to say, like, this is really incredible,
sure,
or this is really sublime or transcendent.
You know, a 4-star review is going to get read by a lot of people.
Right, and so I think I had a lot more pressure on myself where, you're right, if it's a train wreck or, you know, it's an easy slam, I mean, that does come a lot easier.
Yeah, we're much better at slamming people than we are
complimenting
them. Well,
it's funnier anyway. and, you know, there's that story where you remember if there's some devastating line. Let me read you a devastating line from your current reviews that are out. This is of a restaurant. What restaurant is this? This is of Aqua restaurant that you wrote. It's just a horrible line that makes you lose sleep at night.
This was not a rave, by the way, your Aqua review.
As for the aforementioned special strawberry risotto, it was a dreadful pile of pale pink mush that looked and tasted an awful lot like an oatmeal adorned with edible pansies. It was inexplicably topped with a trio of sautéed shrimp to boot.
Anthony, ouch. If you ever write about my restaurant and you use the words dreadful and mush, I'm going to be very unhappy unless we're at the Iditarod.
I was rooting for them. I thought the place had a great vibe in the beginning. But the two special pages, that got me, that started to get the fire burning in my head.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to supplement the menu, I love that it's on paper because, you know, there's nothing worse than the Italian-American formula of, reading the specials to the customers, and there's usually 18 of them.
Sure, 78 specials. 8 of them start with veal.
What was the puttanesca again? One was the farfalle with?
But there, it seemed like there was the specials and the really specials on top of the regular menu. and then he said, and I highly recommend the strawberry risotto.
Oh!
I almost fell out of the chair.
But we have a new category now. We have what's known as the super special. We've started a new thing.
We have
specials and super specials.
I have to say, when you do something like strawberry risotto, okay, you are throwing down, as a restaurateur, you're throwing down a gauntlet.
Yeah.
And you know what? I guess you as well, Anthony. You throw that gauntlet down, I'm picking it up.
Well, yeah, like I said, like I have nothing against Ferran Adrià from El Bulli in France, Spain. He would have put it through the cryovac. I mean, whatever, or through the hydrogenator, but.
But he probably would have made it work. Listen, our guest is Anthony Giglio. He's the wine columnist for Boston Magazine. He's the reviewer for New Jersey Life Magazine. He's an author in his own right and one of the most interesting people to talk about food, especially in this area, and we'll be talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis from Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick. We're here talking with New Jersey's finest restaurant critic, Anthony Giglio, who reviews for New Jersey Life magazine, as well as reviewing for... He's a wine columnist for Boston Magazine. He's written a number of articles and books. He's a freelance journalist. And we're talking about reviewing things in general. Now, the New Jersey Life reviews for October have just come out. And when you do reviews, a gang of reviews in a magazine, I mean, when we see a daily paper, they review one restaurant a week.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a magazine, you tend to review several restaurants at the same time. Is there always a theme to the restaurants you review, or do you find that to be a better way to review restaurants?
Well, I must confess that I'm given the themes by the magazines or the publications, and mm-hmm. often that's decided, 50-50 with the business side of the magazine. So, like, they want to be able to sell things a certain way. Mm-hmm. And while they can't tell me where to go, they could say, for instance, let's use a Columbus Day hook for October.
Mm-hmm.
Let's use fireplaces for November, or, yada, yada. Sumptuous decor for Christmas or, the holiday season. I could roll with that. I could fit anything into any category.
Sure, there's lots of restaurants that fit into almost any category.
Now, how far in advance do you visit these places before the reviews come out? Is it months at a time?
Yeah, it's tough. Magazines, the classic lead time is 3 months. Which makes makes it really hard to be
mm-hmm.
timely, and for that reason, I almost always steer clear of the specials,
right.
or at least seasonal specials.
Unless it's strawberry risotto,
exactly.
Then
I just can't resist. For instance, like when I went to Scalini Fedeli, they were doing tomato salads in the summer. Even though I was reviewing for October,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't mention it because
right.
it just who's going to get a good tomato in October?
Right, you can't.
Or November, whatever. So, so in that respect, even though I want to taste it, I'll pass it, just in looking for something more, on the menu, a proper menu.
Something that'll be there more.
Right.
And do you get to choose what restaurants you go to?
Now, see, that's a tricky question, Francis, because to people like you with restaurants,
yeah.
the answer is no. I'm told where to go. But the truth is, yes, I pick them all.
No, I would really love to come to your place, but I just, the editor
says... But my editor won't let me.
I've used that line about 7 million times in the last 10 years. I would love to, but it's not up to me.
Well, let's hope that there are no restaurateurs listening right now, because we know hardly any of them do.
We get emails from all over the place. Our guest today is Anthony Giglio. He's one of the most fun and interesting food writers, both in the book that he's written on cocktails in New York, as well as his wine column for Boston Magazine, and as restaurant critic for New Jersey Life Magazine. We'll be talking with him more in a moment after the news.
He's got a great story for us about a restaurant he reviewed once
named after an area code. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or reach through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download us to your computer by podcasting us through iTunes.
Our guest today is Anthony Giglio. Anthony is one of our favorite food writers and wine writers in the world. He's the wine columnist for Boston Magazine. He's the reviewer for the New York Sun and New Jersey Life magazines. It's kind of a bi-state reviewer we have there. For 10 years, he was the reviewer for New Jersey Monthly magazine, and he also has a great book out called Cocktails in New York, and he's also working on a revision of the Mr. Boston Cocktail book. What's that all about there, Anthony?
What's that about?
Mr. Boston.
70th anniversary edition, and they came to me after they saw my book, Cocktails in New York, and asked me if I would consider updating it. And
fantastic.
After I looked at it, I said, it actually needs more than an update. It needs a gut job. and they said, go with it.
For those of you who don't know about the Mr. Boston Guide, it was when we started. I mean, Mark and I are 40 years old. We started bartending at 21. It was behind every single bar.
Every bar.
It was the bar.
The United States.
The only little problem with that book was that everything in it was wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, if you made cocktails from the Mr. Boston book, they were all terrible.
Yeah.
The measurements were wrong. The ingredients were lousy.
Yeah.
But it's an institution, this book.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony Giglio is going to bring it into the 21st century. How did you tackle such a project? Does any of the old Mr. Boston still survive?
Well, believe it or not, Audrey Saunders, one of our favorite cocktail mavens, lent me her original 1935 copy.
Wow.
Nice.
So I was able to go in there, and, you know, I could talk for hours about this, but, like, you know, for instance, there wasn't a single vodka drink in there because vodka didn't exist yet in America. But, you know, and the categories were crazy for, you know, the egg creams, and it was a totally different book.
Mm-hmm.
But what I looked in there and said, okay, well, I can't bring all this old stuff back in. It's not my mission to bring back, you know, to reinvent retro. I wanted to look at what he was using ingredients-wise and technique-wise, and if you looked at the evolution of the book over 70 years from repeal to now, somewhere probably in the 60s and 70s, along with plastic, came powdered mixes,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Prefab juices, prefab
right.
everything that were meant to make things easier for the bartender. But as we all know from Dale DeGroff and all the legions after him, you know, thanks to Joe Baum, this was unacceptable.
Actually made them more disgusting instead of making them easier.
Let me bring everybody up. We referred to a whole galaxy of people that our listeners may not know what we're talking about.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. And I think they're all really important people. Audrey Saunders owns a brand new bar. We've talked about it with Deborah Coons Garcia when she was on the show just last week.
Pegu Club.
She owns a brand new cocktail lounge called the Pegu Club on Houston Street in Manhattan, which is probably the center of the cocktail universe right now, and it's an absolutely fabulous cocktail lounge. And people may not realize that cocktails now are made from true ingredients, and bartenders are even coming to call themselves bar chefs, and they're making real cocktails from real ingredients, and they're very important, and they approach the complexity of wine and beer and other parts of the menu program. Anthony also mentioned Dale DeGroff, who is the king of all bartenders. You can find both of these people listed on our website, and Dale was the grandfather or the godfather of bringing back, he killed me for the grandfather remark, I think. the godfather of the American cocktail.
He's not that old.
And he also has a book out that's really great that you can pick up on our website. But what's so interesting, Anthony, is you've taken this book that was at one time, in right after Prohibition, was you know, the book on the American cocktail. And then with the 70s, it sort of fell into disrepute. And now you brought it back as a contemporary cocktail book.
Yeah.
Can we say disrepair instead of disrepute?
Yeah, we can.
Both, I think. I think we can use both.
Now, there will be those who are nostalgic. Once they open it, they're going to realize what's missing, and it's the 70s Playboy-esque photographs of drinks draped on blue velvet.
Mm.
I mean, they were supposed to be, I guess, the inspiration of the pinup girls of World War II. I have no idea, but there was a lot of fuchsia, pink, and maroon velvet.
Let me tell you. And they were some of the most terrible drinks in the world. They really, really were. So if you want to experiment, I mean, you can pick up Anthony's book or when the Mr. Boston Guide comes out again. And if you're a restaurateur and you're out there listening, we get a lot of emails from restaurateurs all around the world. If you're neglecting your cocktail program, you're really making a mistake. Because if you go someplace and they have real cocktails, again, from real ingredients. Let me throw something out there, Anthony. You're a cocktail expert. I find that the chocolate martini, the drinks made with apple pucker and other silly fake ingredients. I mean, apple pucker is a liqueur that is just it's fake. It's,
again, I think though, Francis, the problem isn't the drinks. The problem is the ingredients.
But the drinks that are made from those ingredients, I don't have any respect for. Where there are cocktails that are made from fresh juices and really good liquors and liqueurs, what's the difference? What's the dividing line between cheesy and a really good cocktail program, Anthony?
I have to say this. To separate, you know, the bartenders from the home bartenders, because that book is also, you know, huge among, you know, novices. I mean, it's in every college dorm in America.
Right.
I celebrate the spirit of you know, of invention or, you know, or making the best of it, let's say. So, like, if you, you know, you don't have a full bar at home, you make the best of it, and you may have to use, you know, apple pucker or whatever else is laying around in the cabinet if you're trying to be spontaneous and, you know, you take what you have. Although, if I were to see you make that and I open the fridge and see that you haven't squeezed any oranges or lemons, we have a problem.
Can I tell you something, Anthony?
Yeah.
It's I can never be spontaneous with apple pucker because I don't have any.
Not allowed in my house.
I'm just saying. But you're right, Francis. But, yeah, when it comes to, you know, if it can get very, very technical, of course. I mean, the true definition of a cocktail, according to yet another name I'll throw out there, Jerry Thomas, who wrote one of the very first known cocktail books in America in the 1850s, it had to be fruit juice, a spirit, a sour, and a bitter. So it had to have bitters. Now, how many cocktails do you know to have dashes of bitters in them? Not that many.
Right.
By definition, that would be a cocktail. You know, for instance, my favorite drink that I really have to be careful with these days, I think as I get older, I have less tolerance for Manhattans. I love Manhattans. And if you know, whether it's made with rye or bourbon, I love it. The original would be rye. The contemporary is bourbon. But I would bet you that 9 out of 10 bars I go into, they don't put the bitters in that belong in it.
Right.
And I have to say, so which bitters do you use? Because I'm trying to trick them, and they look at me, and when I get the deer in the headlights, they say, "I'll have a beer."
well,
that's, I think what people don't realize with the Manhattan, especially, is the aromatics from the bitters are so important to that cocktail.
Can I tell you something else that I think is really great? You talk about making cocktails at home, and I really like cocktails as a part of life, and I think that having a drink or two a day, you know, on the days that you feel like
having a drink. Keeps
the doctor away? I don't know, but he's not come over recently. But I think that having cocktails, and we're talking about in moderation, folks, and don't drink and drive and don't drink until you get drunk, but to have a cocktail with dinner, before dinner and then a glass of wine with dinner, I think is very civilized. And you mentioned Manhattans, Anthony. One of my favorite things is the Manhattan at home.
Yep.
In a true martini pitcher or a cocktail pitcher is a very different experience than a Manhattan in a bar.
Yeah.
And I think that introducing the cocktail when you get home from work with your wife or with your husband and just enjoying it as the ice melts over time and the cocktail actually gets weaker, I adore that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, my mother, and I don't want to get too long-winded on this, very quickly, my first spirit in utero, my first cocktail, was a Manhattan. my mom.
Your family keeps very good records, Anthony.
It's on Super 8. It's actually my mother, New Year's Eve 1966. She looks like Priscilla Presley with an 8-foot hairdo. She's in a ball gown, and she's got me 2 months from birth, and she's holding up a Parliament Unfiltered and a Manhattan.
That explains.
Yeah, I get it, man.
Explains the height problem.
And the 11
love
fingers.
And the love of Manhattan. But, my mom bequeathed to me her Manhattan set from the late 50s, and it's got the glass rod and the straight pitcher that's etched. It's really beautiful, but the glasses are, basically like stemless martini glasses or cocktail glasses that are fluted. They're fanned out more like more of a tulip, but they're very small. And she said, you didn't have these 12-ounce glasses.
That's it.
It's preposterous because, you know, we all know this, not only is it because it's too much alcohol at once, but it gets warm.
Yeah,
right.
And
nobody
says,
wants a warm
stirring and pouring and stirring and pouring, and that's how you had cocktail hour before dinner.
And you know what? If you have a good host, they keep that glass full.
And another thing that's changed, it's just another thing, we supersize everything. There's no need to supersize a cocktail. A cocktail, a martini, should be about 3 ounces.
Yep.
And people, you go out, and one of the reasons
that's
very
probably
dangerous,
how many French fries we should have, too, Francis.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so dangerous, you go out, and you get a Manhattan, and they serve it in this big glass, and they fill it to the rim. I just don't understand it. Our guest is Anthony Giglio. He's the reviewer for the New York Sun and New Jersey Life magazine, the wine columnist for Boston magazine. His book is Cocktails in New York, and we'll be talking more with him about reviewing restaurants and maybe some interesting and funny and threatening stories that have happened to him while he's been doing that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145.
Welcome back. You're listening to Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we have with us Anthony Giglio, who is a food writer for Boston Magazine, as well as a reviewer for the New York Sun and New Jersey Life Magazine, and author of the book Cocktails in New York. Anthony, let's get back to dishing about restaurants in Jersey. What do you say?
I'm game.
Everybody wants to be a restaurant reviewer, especially when things go interestingly, or especially when things go wrong. You had one of my favorite reviews that you ever wrote was of a restaurant named after an area code. Why don't you tell us about that?
I'm nervous, but I'll tell you. The restaurant was called 973, and I used the past tense for a very important reason. 973 was named when they just split the 201 area code.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of
mine... That's a pretty big area. It'd be hard to find that restaurant just by that 973.
So they added an area code in New Jersey called 973, and this restaurant opened up in that area code, and it adopted it as...
Somewhere
as
in the seven counties that had that
name. Okay, so you're in a restaurant named after an area code. Short-lived, I might add.
Surprise, it's in a strip mall in the corner, like buried in the corner between, you know, a Chinese restaurant and a dry cleaner. But it got a lot of hype in the beginning, and a friend of mine's brother was the one who told me about it. And, you know, I said to him, I'll think about it, because I never promise anybody anything. I don't want to...
Right, you don't tip them off.
I don't want them to get tipped off.
Sure.
So we went, this was for New Jersey Monthly, probably 5 years ago, and my wife and I went with a group. We always took two extra people, so we're always four tops. And we went twice, and one experience was worse than the other. But the place was really packed to the gills, but I felt like it was packed with just, all the friends of the owners.
Uh-huh.
And let's put it this way. It seemed like a kind of a Goodfellas scene going on where there was a lot of kissing and hugging and drinking and laughing. It was, you know, air kissing. It was a lot of like glitterati.
You got to tell us what happened with the service though.
Okay. So we were waiting forever. They, you know, there's no reservations and they made us wait, and we finally get seated, and we get seated next to the kitchen. Because everyone who came in kept getting ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. They were important.
Yeah. And our waiter is the worst kid on the block. I mean, it's just the worst possible waiter we've ever had. And you know, after driving us crazy with the recitation of the specials, and I'll be right back, and be right back, and be right back, we finally want to order. And he's coming towards us from the kitchen. He comes through the swinging doors. As he's getting to him, I raise my hand to say something, and he reaches into his apron and pulls out his cell phone.
Are
and flicks it, puts it into his ear, and gives me the air, you know, number one up in the air, the one minute sign in the
just
air.
A minute, just
hold on
a
second. I'm here just for a minute. You sit right there, okay?
And he turns around and went back into the kitchen.
Anthony, if my waiter picks up his cell phone, he better be calling me.
And,
okay.
So that's when everybody in the world wants to be a restaurant critic, because you're going to write about this.
Right. And
hold
I...
Hold on just 1 second. Hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. I got the very important call coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
You can eat later.
Okay.
And, you know, so I was ready to crucify him from the start. That was the second visit.
Right.
And at the end, you know, so I write the review, and I say that I cannot wait to get out of this place. And if I only had the waiter's cell phone number, I'd ask for the check.
Okay. So you write this in the review.
Yeah.
And it's not, they're not four stars, I'm taking it.
No, and they didn't last too much longer. They closed soon after.
Okay.
Not to say I was single-handedly responsible by any means.
Right.
I would imagine they treated a lot of people that badly.
Right.
I get a call from the brother of the friend.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy's, I mean, I get a call from my buddy on behalf of his brother, who says, I don't know what you said, because he wasn't in the loop of what I'd written.
Uh-huh.
He said, but my brother saw the owner, one of the owners of 973, outside of a movie cinema on Sunday, and when he went up to say hello to him, they were each with their girlfriends, he one said to the other, hey, I want to thank you for sending your friend Anthony to us. And he said, oh, you're welcome. And he roundhoused him.
Punched him in the face?
Cold cocked him. He went down. He went down. And
Anthony?
I was named in the lawsuit as part of the reason why this happened.
Are you serious? Did you have to testify?
No. Thank God. I think it was dropped.
But oh, my
I
God.
I never pursued anything about it. I mean, I was mortified.
I got to tell you, Anthony, no matter what, I don't think I'd ever hit a reviewer. So there's some good news for you. I'm probably not going to hit you if you write something bad.
He hit him for me.
Good thing you weren't around. I got to say, I have another favorite line from a review that you wrote for New Jersey Monthly a long time ago, and I got to share it with everybody. It was a review of a restaurant called Lunello, which you reviewed very favorably.
Loved it.
But Lunello, Mark and I think we may have suggested it to you. I mean, probably a lot of people suggested it to you, but Mark and I love that place.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote a very good review of it, too. But it's a very ethnic place, let's just say.
Mm-hmm.
More marks in your ethnicity than mine.
What are you trying to say?
But
you're sitting right next to me. Be careful.
You wrote, well, what did you write in the beginning? You wrote that
the bar scene was like a casting call for The Sopranos. I said, given all the lycra tees, plunging cleavage, heaving cleavage and open-toe shoes, period. And then there were the women.
As a man with heaving cleavage there, Anthony.
Did they like it? Were they happy that you said that?
No, we fought about it. My editors fought with me. They didn't want it. They were like, what man has heaving cleavage? I'm like, men who take steroids. What are you talking about?
Oh, I love it.
And
love
we
it.
Had a big fight about changing back and forth. Lunello didn't send any thank yous. I get very few thank yous. but they didn't thank me.
That was so that the readers would thank you. Listen, our guest is Anthony Giglio. He's the wine columnist for Boston Magazine, the reviewer for the New York Sun and New Jersey Life Magazine, and also author of a book called Cocktails in New York, and he's working on the revision of the Mr. Boston Cocktail Guide. Anthony, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
It's been great. Thanks
so
much.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
You're super. Take care. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. You're back with The Restaurant Guys, and we said goodbye to our guest, Anthony Giglio, but he won't hang up the phone. And so we got to talking at the break, and he told us a funny story, and we had to bring
gotta
you back.
Share it with you.
Tell us about your review of Ristorante Da Benito, which was at one time one of the best Italian restaurants in New Jersey.
It broke my heart. I called to make a reservation. I used a fake Italian surname, and they cannot pronounce it. I mean, I kept going over it. I'm spelling it. I'm like using the. I'm enunciating, and it came out Eastern European every time, every way I tried to say it in Italian. And I said to myself, something's amiss here.
Bad sign.
And we settled on something Eastern European, which I figured out was where all the waiters were from when I got there.
Oh.
But I don't think anyone spoke even very good English, let alone Italian, because everybody knowingly. Nodded to me, like with that wink and the nod, even to my quip, wow, it's pretty empty in here for a Friday night.
Yes.
And the food was not, didn't live up to what it had been?
The first special at Da Benito was a wakame seaweed and spicy ginger sauce with tuna carpaccio.
What part of Italy does wakame come from?
That was the writing on the wall.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. You know, there's a restaurant in Orange where I grew up called Libretti's, which is still actually pretty good for a very casual meal. But when I was a kid and Mr. Libretti was in the kitchen, it was, you know, it was great. But now, you know, it's changed hands very many times.
So, Anthony, when you did the fact-checking at Da Benito, was there any, you know, consolation there? Was there any
explanation at all?
Mark, there are divas among we writers who sometimes employ the fact checker, who's usually the youngest person on the staff. For reviews like this, I leave it up to them. I did not call over there.
Name, address, phone number.
All right,
Anthony. Anthony, listen. Now we're going to say goodbye to you again, and you have to go this time because the show's over,
man.
All right, I'm out of here.
It's over.
Our guest is Anthony Giglio from Boston Magazine, The New York Sun, New Jersey Life, and author of Cocktails in New York, and also the new revised Mr. Boston, which is due out any day now,
It was great, Anthony. Thanks so much.
Thanks for coming. Hey, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time, 12 noon.